We're going to leave you this week and this hour with a picture of the wide streets of Baghdad, the busy markets, sparkling, gaudy monuments, too many pictures of Saddam Hussein, too many BMWs, the cool mountains of Sulaymaniyah, the Iraqi city, the swampy bayous of Basra in the south with the oily stench of New Orleans right next to ancient fishermen. Iraq has for so long been a land of wonders behind an ugly mask of one kind or another. There was Saddam's mask, then the U.S. occupation with its ugly green zone and bloody chaos, lately the mask of a laughable government less interested in uniting the country than in playing deadly sectarian political games. Now Iraq is facing a moment of destiny, and we've seen it this week. Will Baghdad's mask be torn off or replaced by another mask? Muzaffar al-Husseini is a former fixer, translator, and stringer for the New York Times and the U.S. Army in Baghdad, and Hugh Martin served as an infantryman with the Ohio National Guard in Iraq. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
And we decided to talk to you because you've had such experience on the ground, seeing in great detail the sort of social fabric of Iraq during these years. If there was one thing, Muzaffar, if you could just snap your fingers and change anything that's happened in the last 11 years, what do you think in Iraq that would be?
I wouldn't have the U.S. to disband the Iraqi army in 2003. That was a huge thing.
So if the army had stayed together, if it had controlled things, if it had become sort of the police force, that would have meant a million times better a situation than we have right now.
Definitely, absolutely. I mean, if you look at it, let's try to compare Iraq to Egypt. It is the Egyptian army that really saved Egypt, you know. So probably Iraq needed the same thing, you know. If there was this only one side in Iraq that was in control of the whole nation, then it would have been way, way better for Iraqis. Mm.
That's Muzaffar al-Husseini, a former fixer, translator, and stringer for the New York Times and the U.S. Army in Baghdad. Hugh Martin, what would it be for you if you could snap your fingers and change one thing over the last 11 years?
You know, honestly, I'm not lying, but that was actually the same answer I was thinking. I think it was disbanding the Iraqi army, and then also the way we sort of just had a general blanket denouncement or banishing in a way of all the former Baathists when we came in. And so I think it would have kept a lot of guys from being on the streets and resorting to other means.
Well, it's remarkable because both of you come from two very different sides of the sort of cultural divide. And even though you both saw the same things on the streets in Baghdad, Hugh, when did you first come to that conclusion? What was it you started to see on the streets that told you that things were just really possibly spiraling out of control, even with the U.S. presence in Baghdad?
I can be very specific about this. On my patrols and going on raids and things like that, there's always so many groups of men that were just out of work and that would be on the streets trying to find work. And a lot of them would, you know, really look at us kind of with a lot of contempt. There was obviously a lot of resentment. When I was there, I saw this growing, and as we stayed there and just made our presence bigger, there was more contempt. And of course, by being there, we make a lot of mistakes, and people get hurt, people get killed, and it just eventually keeps growing, and there's more hatred towards the soldiers, so which is understandable.
Moody al-Husseini, what did you see from the street level that told you things were really not really containable here?
Probably it was the way that the U.S. dealt with Iraqis. I could tell right away that most of the U.S. Army, you know, even their like high ranks officers, they didn't really know what to do. They didn't really know who they're dealing with. You know, the components of the Iraqi people, you know, the Sunnis, the Shiis, the tribes, the different religious groups, you know, all of that.
But do you think that's overplayed? I mean, Iraqis have lived together, Sunni and Shia, for hundreds and hundreds of years. I mean, I just don't get the sense that the U.S. came in and started an argument between the Sunni and the Shia. What do you think went wrong? What was fumbled there?
This is a very wrong concept. It's not the U.S. that started this conflict between Shiis and Sunnis. This always been there. The problem is, you know, the Americans came in such crucial time, you know, like we're like Sunnis and Shiis, both we're on the edge, you know.
Let's talk about some conversations you might have had while you were in Iraq. Hugh, do you remember a conversation you had with a superior or with someone who was in a position of authority in the National Guard or with the military unit you were with, where you said, "Can we do something to help these guys? I mean, don't we need to be talking to these people differently?" Did you ever just say something, even just informally, not critically, but just, "I don't know, it seems to be going in the wrong direction here"?
Yeah, I mean, those types of things would happen almost every day. It's where we'd have some days where we would be out working with, I don't know, certain like a Kurdish political group, or and other days we'd be working with maybe a Sunni group, or we'd be talking, you know, to all different types of people. And some days you'd feel like there was really some kind of progress and we were getting somewhere. And then other days things would happen, whether it was a shooting or a roadside bomb. I always thought, you know, why can't we just talk about this more, and why can't we work things out? But the thing was, to go off what Moody's saying, I mean, these differences have been there, you know, long before we arrived, long before the British arrived. And I think I always felt that in some ways we were just kind of delaying this sort of fight that's going on right now, and they were just kind of waiting for us to pull out for it to happen. And so when I was there and thinking about talking more and trying to just communicate with different types of people, we would find that even when we tried that, there is almost this brushing off, like, you know, you guys are from the US, you're soldiers, and it's impossible for you to understand the nuances and differences of our people, and there's no way you can do it. And so it's almost like, we're going to figure this out and work, you know, we're going to work this out ourselves. And if we have to wait till you leave to do it, you know, that's what's going to happen.
Moody, do you think the mask will ever come off of Baghdad, and that its former historic sort of splendor will ever be restored?
Well, hopefully, of course, you know, I would love to see that, but then, and unfortunately, with the current circumstances, with what I've seen already in the last 11 years, it's going to be really tough. It's going to be hard.
Do you consider yourself an Iraqi, Moody?
I just got my citizenship in May. I became a U.S. citizen, and I'm. It's really hard to say, but I consider myself as an American more nowadays.
And Hugh, is there a piece of you in Iraq and always will be?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, besides obviously growing up in the States and, you know, my own country, I care more about Iraq and feel, you know, close to that country, more than any other country except my own, you know. So it's, and I sincerely feel, you know, emotional when I read a lot of the news coming out of there and read a lot of the testimony and things like that.
Well, Hugh Martin and Mudafar al-Husseini, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mudafar al-Husseini is a former reporter, fixer, and stringer for the New York Times and a translator for the U.S. Army in Baghdad. Hugh Martin served with the Ohio National Guard in Iraq in 2004.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.